Hello, hello, and welcome back to Kim Talks Resilience. I'm your host, and wow, I just love me my Tuesdays, because Tuesdays I get to learn so much and, get just meet all these incredible women through the Kim Talks Resilience podcast. This is where we share insight and inspiration in life, love, and business with resilient women around the world. So before we get started, I do want to bring awareness to queenofresilience.shop. If you're out and about, you don't want to go out to the mall, but you do want to wear something new or want a new clutch, something maybe a little sassy, something that's got a little mother hustlers going on, do check out queenofresilience.shop. This is my store online. And hey, if you have some requests or some ideas, do share them with me. So our guest today, first of all, just so you know, I'm sliding in and it's been one of those crazy days and I've been running and doing meetings and I'm like going, oh my gosh, I gotta get home. And we have the world's largest stampede going on in Calgary, Alberta. So getting just home as my husband's driving, like, you know, he's got this Buick, so old guy car, right? But it's a new car and he's just whipping around and getting in and out, but I made it. And Shelley is just so lovely. She was just sitting here patiently in the green room ready for me. But I think this is maybe patience as part of Shelley's superpower. We're going to meet with her here in just one second, but tell you who Shelley Roy is. She has worked with thousands of adults and adolescents in a wide range of learning situations. As a leading figure in perceptual control theory, that's PCT, and I didn't know this word before just a few moments ago, pedagogical, say that three times, pedagogical coach, a visual strategist, a leadership coach, and process and facilitation expert. Shelley has worked with individuals, schools, businesses, not-for-profit agencies, and jails on a regional, state, and national and international basis. Ms. Roy has authored and co-authored several books based on neuroscience and PCT. Shelley is also a mother and grandmother. She sees herself as an igniter of possibilities. I'm guaranteeing, folks, this is going to be a good one. So welcome to the show, Shelley. I'm Bria. Hey, how are you doing?
I'm creating a great day. The weather here has been crazy, but you know, you go with the flow.
You go with the flow. Well, we had actually great weather on Friday and still one of our major telecommunications companies went down. So I was just excited to be able to keep working. Yeah, they had some sort of weird bug when they did an upload. You know, when you go and update your phone and nothing works again, that just happened to the entire country.
Yeah, like they cut a fiber optic line up here a couple of days ago and it took them forever to get it fixed.
Oh no. Okay. So Shelley, share with us who you are. We got little snippets in there.
Yeah.
Who are you?
I would say who I am. I always say a couple of things about myself. One is I have a tattoo that says, tell me your life story on my forehead. I don't go anywhere. Even I'm in the North Woods. I maybe see one person a day if I do that. And I'm out walking. And of course, that one person who I have no clue who they are stops and we've developed sort of a friendship and a whole conversation. I go into a pharmacy, CVS pharmacy. I come out knowing how many children the person has and where they were born and where they've lived. And, you know, I sort of hesitate when I'm on an airplane to tell people what I do because I end up doing coaching, counseling, whatever, the whole ride back. So that's a little bit, I sometimes refer to myself, that's why I was chuckling back here, as the sassy Scandinavian, because I got a little bit of sass in me and very determined. So that's a little bit about me. I'm definitely a people person. But I also have this thing that I love being, I'm in the North Woods in what I call my treehouse on the ground. And so I'm a huge proponent of looking to nature for answers and taking care of the world around us and really believe that it takes a village. So that's a couple of things about me, who I am.
The nature, over the last few years, we're seeing studies coming out of countries like Japan. mm-hmm. where people are actually doing nature therapy. So that's yeah. kind of interesting. And there's this whole ability to kind of slow down and breathe a little, which I think a lot of us, it was forced upon us through, you know, the world took a reset and said, yeah, you guys just all need to slow down, right?
And look what you did today.
Yes. All right, my dear. Tell me. Okay, first, pedagogical. Yep. What is that?
Pedagogy is the study of teaching and learning. And I've always said I knew I was a teacher when I was probably 4 years old. I'm old enough that I grew up sort of in what was a post-World War II house. We had a basement. And my dad built me a chalkboard when I was four and hung it in the basement, like out of a piece of plywood. So it was humongous. And from that day on, anytime we played school, I was the teacher. And I literally cannot shut it off. I have to really work to shut it off. Like if I see somebody struggling somewhere, to me, that's an opportunity to teach and I'm going to step in. And so my kids would often say to me, Mom, not now, back off. So that's pedagogy is teaching and learning.
So I think that's way better than the word bossy. My sisters always told me I was bossy. See, I didn't know there was another term. No, let me show you. I can teach you how to do that. Yeah. Okay. So overall, tell us what you do. Now we know what pedagogy is, right?
Yeah.
Take me through the PCT. Take me through this whole, what you do. Right.
Okay. So about 33 years ago, because my youngest son, I was pregnant with my youngest son. I was introduced to a man by the name of William T. Powers. And he had developed something called perceptual control theory. So it really sort of didn't come into probably about, I think 1973 was one of his first books. It was out there. And I studied with him until he passed away. I think it's been 3 years ago now. And perceptual control theory is a theory of living systems, all living systems. So, of course, my application is in the area of people or humans. So it's really hard to narrow what I do because it has anything to do with human behavior. So that's really where it is. And control theory is very different than most theories in two different ways. One, how most psychology is developed is by what we call casting nets, where you toss a net out into the water, see what fish show up, and you make a prediction based on that. And that's pretty much how we study psychology. Control theory was done through something called modeling. So you have a theory, then you try to model a behavior, and then you check to see if the model is accurate. And perceptual control theory runs about 99.9% accurate. So it's extremely accurate. It's not predictive in the sense of I can't predict what you're going to do, but I can explain your behavior. So we basically work like a thermostat. The difference is when you use a thermostat, something outside the thermostat sets the temperature. And what the thermostat does is constantly measure, is it higher than that, lower than that, where is it in terms of that?
Yeah, so it regulates.
It regulates. And so we do the same thing. What we have is instead of temperatures, we have what we call references. So we're always controlling for certain references. And what we're constantly doing is measuring the environment around us in terms of that. But most of that is done unconsciously. Right. And so sometimes we need to be intentional on what we would say, what reference we're controlling for, because what we're designed to do is to rid ourselves or take care of what we call the error, the difference between what I want and what I'm getting. Think of Goldilocks and the three bears. That's a great analogy. And we're trying to, all of our behavior is intended to reduce that discrepancy. That's what it's all about. So if I know what I want and I know how I'm perceiving the environment, I can usually figure out, okay, what do I need to change? How I'm looking at it, or do I need to change what I'm wanting right now? So that's perceptual control theory sort of in a nutshell.
And who is your, so you say when you've taught this, local,
Right.
state, national, international, even into jails, and so not looking at jails, but looking at females who are, so it's kind of like a jail, females who are coming out of corporate world. So
Yeah.
we have this huge, this is, I'd like to actually, if we could take some of everything you're talking about, and I'd like to actually focus on our avatar, right?
Yeah.
Betty has worked 20 years in corporate America.
Yep.
She is 44 years old. She tried to go back. And just, it's just not going to work. She has, her mind has shifted so much, her needs and wants, and her, have shifted so much during COVID that working in a corporate world, because they're not shifting, they're not changing with
Right.
us. What would be, based on your theory, how could Betty A become better at understanding her needs and what she has, how she has to regulate, and how can Betty change her mindset and her focus? Because a lot of people who have been very corporate groomed, they don't know how to, they don't realize their individual thought process and all the different things that go into and navigating other human beings.
Right. And
So
they're very often, I coach, that's a place I coach a lot of women in leadership, is people that are very much in what I think of sort of is the old school patriarchal hierarchical structure. And as women move more and more into that, they at first try to, of course, address it, like try to take on those characteristics. Then they got nasty names by other people. And so there's a whole shift in there. So when I work with those women, one of the things that I work with everybody about is in control theory, we have multiple levels. 11, I won't go into all 11, but the higher ones are what I call the being levels. And the being levels are looking at our systems level concept or what you might call your mental models. What are the mental models? How do you believe the world works? Then taking those and looking at, okay, if this is how the world I believe the world works, what are the principles that I want to live my life by? I can live my principles no matter what environment I'm in. It's how do they play out? If I stay in that arena, I have way more flexibility. What too often we think about is what am I going to do? That's way down the hierarchy instead of thinking about who do I want to be in this situation. So focusing on the principles level is the question, who do I want to be? When I walk out of this meeting, what do I want to say about who I was? Not what did I do, not anything else, not what others did, but what am I to want to say about who I am when I walk out of this meeting? Do I want to be a person who's generous? Do I want to be a person who sets boundaries? One of the things that I think women often struggle with is we think boundaries are sort of a bad thing. Well, here's the thing. Yes is no, and no is yes. So if I say yes to somebody else, I'm saying no to myself in some way, shape, or form. So that's another place that I think a lot of women in particular can look at. What am I saying yes to? And when I'm saying yes to that, what am I saying no to? So recognizing that those two are paired together. So who do I want to be when I walk out of this meeting? What do I want to say about the person I was? Was I somebody that was respectful? What does respect look like in this culture? What does this respect look like? I've worked in cultures all over the world. Respect is a very culturally laden thing.
Yeah, I found that out the hard way in Canada.
Well, I taught on a reservation.
What is not an acceptable response when you can't hear something? It's pardon? Excuse me? I found out the hard way. Keep going, sorry.
No, I'm sure we both could come up with many examples. No, I worked on the reservation, the Navajo for the Navajo Nation for a while. And first of all, I think one of the things I know you were going to ask me, how did I get here? I didn't mention this. When I was in ninth and 10th grade, I went to school overseas. I lived in Germany. My dad was not in the military because people always ask me that, but he was head of international defense systems. So I went to school with all of the political attaches from all over the world that were in Germany. So a very small group of people, but a lot of cultures and a lot of languages. And it was such a time, when socialization is a big thing. right, at that time in your life. And so I learned people are people. And so that changed very much my perspective. And I've always sort of been drawn to what I think of as cultural immersive situations. So when I was on the Navajo with the Navajo, I was fascinated by their culture and how respect looks so different in their culture than it did in the Scandinavian culture that I was pretty much brought up in the Midwest. So that sort of opened the door. Now I'm in Miami during the school year. I'm at a school that's very affluent. But the vast majority of people are not, a lot of them aren't from the U.S. to begin with. They have a very heavy Latin population. We have kids from Russia. We have kids from Argentina, Brazil, Colombia. So that I've learned that you need to pay attention to what respect looks like. Looking somebody in the eye isn't always respectful in a lot of cultures. So that's another piece of it, is understanding that other people's references, their perceptions might not be the same. The other thing I would add to women that they need to maybe start asking is, instead of getting defensive, when somebody says, you're being disrespectful, say, what have I said or done that leads you to believe that I'm being disrespectful? That's a very perceptual control theory PCT question. Because I'm not going to convince them I'm not being disrespectful, but I need the information. I've obviously said or done something that's how they're reading it. It's not that I'm being that, it's that's how they're reading it. So I can change maybe how I'm saying it, what I'm saying, because I probably don't want to be perceived as disrespectful. So those are a couple of the strategies I work with women a lot. Who do you want to be? And if somebody is sort of accusing you of something, check out their perception. What have I said or done that leads you to believe that? Those are two really good strategies. The third one I would probably add is ask, don't tell. Anything you want to tell somebody, see if you can't shift it to a question. This, especially if you're a parent. I work a lot with adolescents, and you'll get a lot farther asking rather than telling. So those are just some ideas that might help people.
Those are great. I've always been in sales my entire life. And so I was trained in witch closing.
Yeah.
You know, knowing we have to go a certain direction, but giving people the option. Right. Yeah. So then you use this with your toddlers also. Right.
Yeah.
You know, all right, it's time to get ready. You know, we have sandals and we have tennis shoes.
Yeah.
Which would you prefer to wear? Either way, kid's got to get something on his shoes, right? Yeah. On his feet. What are a couple measures that we could do? I really like this. Who do I want to be when I'm leaving this?
Yeah.
When they're caught in that, when they've got that judge starting to get them all geared up. Oh, they said this, or, you know, you didn't do this, or, you know, this beaking off, right? And the wisdom within can't come forward because it's getting blocked by this nasty part. And we all have this is human psychology, right? We all have, I swear, some days it's like, I always tell people, oh, I have many voices. Let me
I tell call you. It the committee in my head.
there you go. But when you get caught in the meeting or in a position and you're going, who do I want to be? What are a couple things that you could do internalize to walk yourself through that exercise?
Yeah. The first thing is to recognize in control theory, one of the things we know, you always have a physiological signal first.
Yes.
So physiology always comes first. And in most people, often in women, the pitch of my voice goes up or I start talking faster. Those are two signals that I'm heading there. With other people, it's usually a muscle getting tight, clenching a fist, clenching the jaw, some type of thing. So the first thing I tell people is you need to learn to recognize your signals, your bodily signals, because it's a precursor to knowing you're going there. And the sooner you can stop it, the more likely you are to be able to stop it, right? And not get caught in that. So first thing is pay attention to the signal. What is your signal? And you can find those out very quickly, just whatever. So then ask myself the question, what is happening right now that isn't the way I want it to be? what is happening right now that isn't the way I want it to be, because that's the indicator of where the error exists, where the discrepancy is. I also tell people, don't forget to breathe. We forget to breathe. It's one of the easiest things. So I have another friend, she says, I pay attention to what she calls the backup beeper. The backup beeper in my head, you know, when a machine backs up, beep, beep,
yep.
beep,
beep, beep, beep, beep, beep, beep, yeah. beep.
You know, she has this, she said she gets the signal and the right away she hears the backup beeper. So I always tell people, pause, breathe, right? Those are the first two things, but you have to recognize the signal first, because the signal comes way before anything else. So those are some things that I tell people, stop, breathe. What is it that I'm not getting right now that I want? Okay. And then do I need to change what I want? Or am I reading the situation not the way it may be? Is there another story I could be telling myself about what's happening right now? Sometimes I call that the balcony view. Can I get to the balcony and watch this? I'm not on the stage acting. I'm not really in the audience, but I'm watching what's going on, and so I can back out of it. Sometimes even, I've had a few people, one of the things I recommend to kids a lot, turn the other person into a cartoon character, right?
Yeah.
if this person was a cartoon character or a famous person in a sitcom, who would they be right now? Because it gets my mind going in a different direction. There's some things physiologically I can do, just so you know. I can put my hands over my head, which may sound weird in the meeting, but I could say, oh, and stretch, because when I put my hands over my head, my body chemistry changes. It shifts my chemistry. The other way I can shift my chemistry is to put my hands on my hip and take what they call the power pose, what I call the super pose, right? Those are things that I can teach my body to do. Another thing to do is, we know that your wrist is sensitive to temperature changes. So I sometimes, if I have a glass of water or I have something cooler or hotter with me, I can quickly put it up against my wrist. And that can help me shift what's going on. So those
shift
are
your temperature. Absolutely. Because I think a lot of people get that that temperature thing and then you just get uncomfortable. And it's I think it's important to know that you're not alone in this.
No,
and whatever you think you're going through, you're not alone in this. Yeah. And is that normal for human beings to feel very much in a silo? Like, is that normal?
Well, I think that's what one of the reasons we're social beings, right? We know that. And we don't want to feel like we're the only one. But I think that's where a lot of groups come from, right? That's where AA comes about. That's where alcohol and, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, any type of group. I think that's often where religious groups come out of, is that desire to feel like I'm not the only one. So a lot of groups come on. I mean, even the idea of creating an avatar, which I totally agree with for your audience, we don't want to think we're the only one, and we aren't, right? That's one of the things I like about control theory. It doesn't predict how you and I are going to be, but it does say we're at our core, we're the same. We're all Goldilocks looking for the right condition.
And you have several books. I'm just going to actually see. I'm just right here. I'm not sure if I can see this. Nope, I'm unable to do that. You've got Setting the Tone. So this is what we've been talking about. But you do a lot around children's books. Is that correct? Tell me a little bit about all your books.
Yeah. The one that you have up, it's in the background on my screen. Setting the Tone is about creating connected school classrooms that are, of course, bullying has been a big thing in schools and cyberbullying. And so that's sort of a control theory approach to how to address creating a bully-free classroom. I have my latest book. I'm working on a new one. I'm always working on one. The latest one I did actually was a children's book for young children. It's called Pick the Very Best. And I did all of the illustrations. That's where you saw the facilitation piece in there, the visual piece. Visual strategist. I love drawing. And I think pictures say 1,000 words. So my latest book was a children's picture book. A message very appropriate for adults, but it's a lot about what we've been talking about. It's about the idea of teaching kids that you have some control over your thinking, and that you can sort of learn how to do that. And so it's sort of some strategies in terms of that. I've read it to several of the kids at school. I took it down to the kindergarten room. I've taken it several other places. So that was that one. The other two that are sort of for the general public, one is creating your B-print, which is similar, Kim, to the idea of we were talking about living at the principal's level. The book is sort of walks you through the process. It happened to be the process we used a lot when we worked in the jail with individuals who are presently incarcerated, but we've used it in leadership a lot. I actually have a leadership component to it too that's not in the book, but anybody that wants to write me, I can send them that part of it. But it asks you to look at your beliefs, then what principles do you want to live by? And based on those principles, then what are some, what developing in five areas, health, wealth, relationships, intellect and spirituality, some sort of target references. So creating your B-print, drafting your personal blueprint for living, that is one that's very applicable. If people are interested more in the theory, the one, a people primer, The Nature of Living Systems, is probably the go-to one. The other ones are more lean towards education. Yeah. So
here's it. And you have how many books in total?
I think six now. I have one for teens that's done, but I have to have a new layout person get involved with it. I am working on, I don't know if you know who Austin Kleon is. He wrote the book Steal Like an Artist, is one of his famous ones. He has I read a lot about neuroscience, but also about creativity. I'm fascinated by the creative process. And I love the style of his books. So I'm right now sort of working on one in that sort of style, that it'll be sort of lessons that I haven't decided on a title. But basically, one of the ideas in there is ask, don't tell. Another one is to pay attention to your language, because your language is what is the way that you share your beliefs very often. And switching your language often is a way to begin to move in a new direction, being aware of the language you use.
And if you adopt that language, truly adopt it, it does become, it's just like any other habit.
Yeah.
It's like quitting smoking or starting to exercise or anything like that. It's habit forming. Yeah. So, okay, folks, before we go into the why and our story of resilience, I would ask you all, please take a moment and like, subscribe, comment, and share. Remember, sharing is caring, and we all love those Care Bears. You help keep this going just by liking, subscribing, commenting, sharing. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Shelley, why? Why do you do this? I mean, you say you have a love of learning, but yeah. I mean, but just because you love something doesn't mean you want to share it all the time, right? So you have a love of learning. Why the jail cells? Why the schools? A lot of people don't like kids.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
Well, I work in middle school. A lot of people don't like that level. I would have to say the jail was probably one of the most rewarding places I've ever worked. Of course, financially it wasn't, but I felt like I've had one of the biggest impacts there ever. I think if I had to think back, I don't know if this is a story of resilience, but even as a young child, we had a girl in the neighborhood, and she at that time was a student with special needs. You know, today we have a lot different language than we had back then. And she would say very often to the other kids in the neighborhood, "I'm mentally retarded." And I can remember as a young kid feeling, quit saying that, right? Do you know what I mean? There was a part of me that quit wanted to say, quit identifying yourself like that. I babysat for a young lady across that lived across the street from us. I was one of the only kids in the neighborhood that babysat for her. Another child that was pretty much, there was very little cognition. She could feed herself and walk and whatever, but that was about the extent of it. And so there was always this part of me that wanted to feel like people should be able to become everything that they wanted to become, right? That with the right teacher, with the right opportunities, anybody can achieve what they want to achieve. And so over the years, actually, when I had two sons of my own, at one point I had five boys living with me, ages 13 to 21.
Oh, wow.
My son would say, you know, some people collect stray animals. He would collect stray people, and he would just say, "Mom, they need to be around you." I've always had this desire that everybody should have opportunities. And that's sort of driven a lot of what I've done. I would say, you know, wherever I am, it's really hard for me. And opportunities don't always, like I said, I'm at a very affluent school right now. Opportunity isn't just really about money, right?
No.
It's about, I had two girls, sisters, when I taught 1 year, and I felt, you know, I knew they didn't have a lot at home. And I was, at that time, we used electric curlers. Do you remember those? You know, and I was getting a new set, and I just very quietly asked them one day after school, "Hey, would you girls like, I have an extra set. Would you girls be interested in?" I mean, when I taught on the reservation, I took two kids home with me overnight. I mean, that's just sort of who I've been. And they were shocked that I had both running water and electricity. I mean, you know, so I just, there's this part of me.
I think that where we're at financially with the difference. So the numbers are in, and I kind of did my own rough numbers like a year, just under a year ago. I was talking about the first time we saw inflation in November of last year. We started seeing it, and they're going, okay, they're watching it. And in January, I looked at my husband. I said, you know, you need to make $460 more a month for the average Canadian in order to buy the same groceries they did last year.
Yep.
So food, medication, education, and shelter are all a piece of dignity.
Yeah.
And when we strip children, especially children, of their dignity, where else do they got to go? Right. Yeah. So we curate the environment, right? If we don't want violence in the streets, and we don't want all these things, maybe we nurture the child within first. Right. So
book about violence prevention by James Gilligan. And he says there's three precursors. Does not feel a part of the group is one of them. Inability to manage frustration.
Yeah.
And shame of being ashamed. So shaming people is, if I can tell your audience one thing, avoid it at all costs. It is one of the most damaging things we do on this planet.
I 110% agree, because all of us carry enough shame on our own. We don't need anybody else dishing it to us. Brené Brown is one of the gals that I just absolutely love in how she talks about getting rid of shame. I mean, I carried tons of shame around for years, and there's still things. I still look at some of the things and go, seriously, Kimberly, seriously, you did not just go there. But that's the beauty of being human, is we're all works in progress. But just remember, food, medication, education, and shelter, folks, is not easily attainable for everyone. So, you know, instead of judging somebody for not having something, or showing up and thinking they're being negligent or being rude or being dismissive of the rules, maybe be very kind and see if they need that set of rollers, right? See if you can be of service. So, you know, that's a big one for me. Books, we've talked about your books. Is there a book that inspired you to be who you are?
Well, a couple, probably. When I was a child, I hated reading, which is interesting because now I've not only read voraciously, I'm reading 3 books right now at one time. So I'm an avid reader now. I would say one of the ones I would recommend to your audience is a book by Louise Hay that's called You Can Heal Your Life. And if you're a woman, treat yourself to the beautiful copy that has all the lovely drawings. I found it much later after I had already worked a lot with control theory, but I think how she talks about it. And if you haven't seen the video of her life, it's really worth watching. She's very much in that arena. That would definitely be one I would highly recommend. Another one, especially if somebody's going through a transition, especially a woman that would maybe be going through divorce or relationship issues or recently lost a job or some major life change. The Invitation by Aria Mountain Dreamer, who happens to be a Canadian. She's written The Call, The Dance, but definitely that one would be one. Another one that I really like by an author, I never say his name correctly, Paulo Coelho. I can never say his name correctly. Most people know him for The Alchemist, but as a woman and a Scandinavian at heart, he has a book called The Valkyries, which
I've heard of that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about these warrior women that travel on motorcycles opening spiritual centers. It's just his ability. I would love to be able to write how he writes. His ability to wrap very strong, spiritual, deep, soulful messages into a story is just unbelievable. I mean, I just so admire him as an author. So those would be probably 3 that are at the very top of my list. I mean, actually, a couple of years ago, I did blog posts, 30 days of what's influenced me. Those were a couple that were on the list. But so Aria Mountain Dreamers, The Invitation, You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay, and The Valkyries by Paulo Coelho. I keep, and well, however you say it, like Portuguese.
Well, share with us where everybody can connect with you. What are your socials?
Okay. Most of my socials are all the same. It's Miami Ed Guru. So it's Miami, where I presently live in the winter, which won't be for long. I'm hoping to retire. Ed, educate for education, and then guru. And that's at Gmail. That's my website, miamiedguru.com. That's me on Instagram. That's me on Twitter. So you can always find me there. You can always Google my name. I will come up. I'll be one of the top hits. It's Shelley A. W. Roy. Very simple. So those are probably the easiest ones for people to remember. So Miami Ed Guru, Gmail, Instagram. I have a Facebook page too.
You're just Twitter. Everywhere. You're everywhere. You guys can find it for sure.
The problem was when I first started, all of those things didn't exist. So then it was hard to get something that was a consistent name that felt right. So.
And, you know, it's, if you're truly learning and nurturing, it's constantly evolving also.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who you were 24 months ago is not.
Yeah.
It, you know, so I get that. I get that. All right. Now we're down to what I am collecting is quotes. Quotes and thoughts, right? What is something that inspires you even on the dark days?
Yeah, I would say my all-time favorite movie is Pollyanna, the original one with Hayley Mills.
Yes!
I love it every year. And if you look, it's quoted, I love the Glad Game. That whole idea fascinates me because I've believed in it since I was young. But probably the quote that's semi-correct out of there is, if you look for the good in people, that's what you'll find. And that is always my reminder to, what am I looking at here? Am I looking for the good in this person, or including myself, right? Always start with self. Am I looking for the good, or am I looking for the bad? Because whatever I'm looking for, that's what I'm going to find. So that would be my quote.
If you're looking for the good in people, That is what you'll find. I love that. It was funny because people used to always joke that I was the Pollyanna in the So
I love all that. And I take it as a compliment.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm so grateful that you actually said that. You're one of the few people that knows what Pollyanna is. I mean, even when she, what did she break? She failed.
Her leg.
Yeah.
And they had to do back surgery. They didn't know if she was going to walk again.
Yeah. And that's back in those days, that was huge.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Shelley, thank you for sharing your evening with me. This is really a lovely chat, and you have so much more we could talk on. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. You know what, everybody, do reach out if you need that insight, that guidance. There's mentorship and there's coaching, there's great books, there's so much going on. And really, we are turning a corner in this world. We are in the age of knowledge, and we have the opportunity and the right to treat ourselves just a little bit better and those around us. And that's what Shelley can help with the insight too. So I just want to say thank you again for joining me here at Kim Talks Resilience. And if you feel that your resiliency is lagging just that wee bit, you know what? Be sure to listen in and lean in to our resilient community. Be sure to grab your free monthly magazine and any kind of insight as to what we're doing here. It, like I said, totally free. ResilientGift.com. That's ResilientGift.com. Totally free. I'm not asking for a credit card. I'm not going to be doing any sneaky renewals. It's all yours. I just want to see you live the most resilient life you can. Again, I'm Kim Hayden, and this is Kim Talks.